We're going to talk about participatory plant breeding, and in the context, it says here, food security and conservation of agrobiodiversity. So the speakers for the rest of the day will address different aspects of this, this topic, and I will try to do just a little introduction to the concept of participatory plant breeding and give you a couple of examples. I do want to mention that Bob Bai, who's shown here, has a health problem and cannot make it, could not travel. So his talk will not be given. And he was to talk about the milpa system in Mexico, and especially the quilite species, which are the non-domesticated plants that are used as a food source by the natives in where maize is grown. So I'm very sorry he can't make the talk, but we have an able replacement. Dr. Gowda is here from India, and he will fill that slot, and you'll see that fairly soon. One other situation is that Fernando Castillo from Mexico needed to have an interview with the U.S. Embassy before he could get a visa, and they didn't have time for him until sometime next month, so he's not here. But he sent slides, so you'll bear with me on presenting some of his information the best I can. So I was going to try to show how we could link agrobiodiversity and conservation and crop improvement and how all those things kind of fit together. So this goes all the way back to a symposium we had in 2000 in Mexico. And when we're talking about linking theory and practice, there are a number of issues, of course. Genetic resource management is one, biodiversity conservation, plant breeding, biotech, economics and marketing, and social context. So those are all factors that are part of the participatory process. And I want to emphasize that it's not just plant breeding as usual, for example. It's much more broad in its context. So I've tried to give you a definition of participatory research in agriculture, and you can argue with me about this if you like, but I think it's a process by which the benefactors or end users of research or research products are active in generating that information or materials to increase crop productivity, to improve production practices, to improve quality, end-use quality, and economic well-being. But beyond that, it's also conserving genetic resources and agrobiodiversity, and that we will try to show how participatory activities are actually one means of conserving genetic resources. So what we need to do is find incentives for on-farm conservation of land races and varieties that are favored by farmers, and some of these varieties were favored for many, many years. Many of the suggested means for incentives for conservation have been proposed, but none are really sustainable, if you think about it. I don't want to get into that discussion. I think Mauricio might come into a little bit of that later. So one hypothesis that we've been dealing with and for a long time has been the incentive of improvement of land races to make them more valuable to the farmers. And how can you make a land race more valuable? And that's a challenge in itself. But if it yields more, has better quality, then the farmer would have more incentive to keep the variety for his own use and for distribution to neighbors and so forth. So we started with that idea about 15 years ago in Mexico, and I'll talk a little bit when I present Fernando Castillo's talk a little bit about how that worked out in maize. So the idea is that we can make genetic improvement in land races or old varieties or favored varieties that will result in higher yields or quality without changing the basic land race appearance or end-use properties. So that's a critical issue, I believe, is to have the land races representing what the farmer likes, but also making them more valuable to the farmer, either by higher grain yields or better end use, or even securing and preserving markets. So I'll take a broad view of a participatory plant breeding. As a plant breeder, I think you got to scramble up the genes a bit and do selection, and that's plant breeding. But we should also think about these other factors, that is, bringing wild plants into cultivation that haven't been cultivated before because they have unique properties. Or we're introducing species, land races, or improved varieties from other areas. That is the old introduction idea, and often there's something to be gained by moving a variety or a crop into a new area. And then what we'll talk about later with a maize situation is mass selection within land races. And for maize, that's fairly easy to do. For some other crops, it's not so easy, but that is one way of moving, increasing the frequency of desirable genes. And then, of course, we can create genetic variability by hybridization and selection. And that, who are the actors then that are participating? So I'm thinking that the participatory part of this is not necessarily the formal breeder who works for a breeding company or for an institution, but it's the products from that program that are delivered to the farm. And I think we'll hear more about that from Dr. Ceccarelli in a little while about his experiences. And so we have evaluations then in the farmers' fields with farmers actively taking notes and making opinions about materials. But beyond that, it needs to go into the household for end-use evaluations, which are very important for a family to decide to keep a variety or not. And finally, market development may be an extremely important area if they intend to produce more than they use on farm. So where are the markets and how are they impacting the communities? And then there's the multiplication issue, or regeneration or reproduction of seed or plant materials, and for on-farm use and for distribution to other farmers that may be interested. And monitoring the performance is a big issue, of course. If you're introducing new materials, new land races, new varieties, you want to monitor their pest and disease reactions very carefully, because we don't want new materials to create problems they never had before. So, who are the actors? The farmer as a breeder and distributor. The public sector organized plant breeding activities, and the universities, advanced research institutes, the national programs, or non-governmental organizations are all organizations that impact on behavior of farmers in making selections and moving materials into their activities. And the private sector is involved in the sense of making materials available for the farmers to evaluate. And if the farmers don't do evaluations, the private sector has a little problem of convincing them that they are going to be purchasing useful material. And the private sector may be a small breeding company that has limited access to testing facilities, or it may be a large company that has quite a lot of resources and can make available materials for the farmer's evaluation. So what are some appropriate activities for participatory plant breeding? One is the small crops, that is, crops with no formal breeding programs. They are sometimes called neglected crops or little used, underutilized crops. There's no formal breeding, then who does the improvement? Then it's kind of left to the farmers themselves to figure out how to make that plant more suitable. And maybe the large or small or large-scale organic farming systems in which varieties are being selected under a relatively new or unused farming system. That is, maybe a system that doesn't use synthetic fertilizers. I work with some growers of asparagus in California, and they don't use any fertilizers at all, but they import guano from Peru as their nitrogen source and their sources, so they spend a lot of money staying away from synthetic fertilizers. And then, of course, there's the whole important area of heirloom variety interest these days, and the seed savers who are maintaining heirloom varieties are very, very important. And during their seed saving activities, these people become plant breeders, and in some cases they have to do controlled matings in order to maintain the varieties or the heirloom varieties that they are concerned about. And an appropriate application too is one where intellectual property is not an issue. It would be intellectual property and ownership issues, farmers are not very interested in participating where they have to deal with government regulations or this sort of thing, or even be challenged about their own rights to use the material. And of course, that also leads to the idea of freedom to operate, that farmers can do their improvements and not be under the wings of a government issue, government regulations. And there are some examples there where the government won't allow marketing of seeds unless they've gone through standardized testing programs, which may be totally inappropriate for the type of varieties that are being developed. And the other thing I want to mention here is as a prelude to formation of seed companies or companies that sell seed. If you think back 100 years or so in the United States, there weren't many seed companies around, but the farmers were doing selection work and figured out how they could make improvements and they could multiply seed and market it. And so the seed companies, many of them, have originated as participatory breeding activities by a small group of farmers. So that's kind of an important scene. So there's still a lot of things you have to think about if you're going to promote the idea of participatory breeding. And of course, access and benefit sharing with respect to the CBD, the conventional biodiversity, is a very important one. Issues of ownership, the materials that the farmers are working with, who owns them, who has the rights to them. And the ownership of improved varieties, if they're taking improved varieties and modifying them by their own selection, who owns them and who has the rights to them. So there's also national seed laws and plant health laws that should be considered, especially if you're going to start to market material to your neighbors or other places. And the International Treaty for Plant Genetic Resources and Food and Ag is another one that needs to be considered these days, and whether there's a government intervention process in seed and plant material multiplication. And I've read some signals on that that are kind of unsettling to me, that the government would say that if a farmer has developed a variety, that he has no rights to market it because it hasn't gone through the appropriate legislated process. And there's risk-taking issues. Farmers are pretty good about taking risks, but they're also pretty good at managing risk. So they're very careful about not getting too deep into something that might cost them a lot of money or affect their farming practice. So, well, the other is complementarity. I think we want to mention this because there are formal breeding programs on many crops, and the formal breeders, are developing materials that will be used by farmers and tested by farmers. And the plant participatory activities are complementary to those activities of the formal breeders. And it's just a matter of communications then, how the formal breeders would be communicating with farmers in terms of what they want, like, and so forth. And many of the same genes can be used by the participatory breeders as would be the formal breeders.